example, celibacy is a Greek invention. The Greeks insisted that all their priests were completely celibate. They had nothing to do with this world. They had—they weren't allowed to have any property. They weren't allowed to get married. This is one of the things that Christianity took from the Greek culture. We need once have a lesson about Christianity, because it's very interesting seeing how so many Christian symbols are really pagan symbols which Christianity adopted to allow a lot of the pagan workers at those times to join Christianity. For example, the sign of a cross is the ancient astronomical sign that represents the sun. And the reason is that the Romans used to crucify their victims. Why? Because the Roman religion at those times was a religion called Sol Invictus, invincible sun. And they said, and they actually crucified people as a token to the sun. And since it was a token to the sun, the ancient astronomical symbol representing the sun is a cross. A cross is not very, it doesn't really fit the human physique. You could choose a better symbol, like maybe a pentacle, I don't know, it's more suitable with five sides. They nevertheless chose a cross, and Christians adopted that cross into their religion. Again, the day that Christianity celebrated as their Sabbath, ancient Christians celebrated the seventh day like the Jews. But when the Council of Nicaea in 332 the Christian Count decided to adopt the Christian religion, in order to allow the Roman pagan workers at those times to accept Christianity easier, they changed their Sabbath to the first day, which is called Sunday, the day of the sun, which was the holy day in the religion of Sol Invictus. And if you see pictures of Christian saints, what do they have behind their heads? A sun, representing the holy people in the religion of Sol Invictus, and so on. So the whole point of celibacy was something invented by the ancient Greeks. And the Greeks held you had to have a complete separation between body and spirit. And then they came to Eretz Yisrael and they were confronted with the Jews. The Greeks knew about the Jewish religion. Many of their famous scholars had direct relations with Jewish scholars. And many of the Greek ancient ideas were taken from Yiddishkeit. And they suddenly confront a ancient, very profound religion that believes that not only are you not allowed to separate the body and the spirit, but you have to combine them. Because Yiddishkeit's goal is taking the material world, taking this physical plane, and elevating it to a level of spirituality. How do we celebrate our Chagim? The Gemara says in Masechet Beitzah, and after the Vavam Beis, on the 15th page, that it's supposed to be split in half. Half to Hashem and half for us. Half you're supposed to eat and drink, and Baruch Hashem we have good meals on our Chagim and very interesting foods, and half should be dedicated to learning. All of our rabbis and our prominent spiritual leaders are all married, they have families, they live on this physical plane trying to elevate it. And the Greeks couldn't comprehend the fact that those two things can be combined. So what they tried to do is they tried to break that connection. First of all, they tried to forbid a bris milah. A bris milah is actually our Jewish way of saying that we take the physical world, the power of bringing children to this world and making it into a spiritual act by sanctifying it, by putting on each and every single one of us the special symbol of God. That's a bris milah. The Sabbath and the day of Shabbat, that is another sign of combining the spiritual and physical plane. The Shabbat is the holiest festival that we have during the year. How do we celebrate the Shabbat? We don't fast. You're not allowed to fast on Shabbat. You have to eat not one meal, not two meals, three meals. And not only that, the Gemara says on Shabbat you get an extra soul, or you could say an extra stomach, depends how you look at it, to be able to actually digest all this extra food. So they try to cancel the Shabbat. Then they try to cancel Rosh Chodesh. Why Rosh Chodesh? Rosh Chodesh is the key factor for the whole Jewish calendar. By canceling Rosh Chodesh, we don't have a Jewish calendar anymore. We don't have any more the special festivals that we have of Pesach, of Sukkot, of Shavuos. They try to do all these things and Baruch Hashem, they failed. And in order to understand how great the war was, all the Mefarshim say that the war in the time of the Hashmonaim wasn't just a war against the Greeks. It was also a war against the Jews that sided with the Greeks. They were called Mityavnim. I heard yesterday a very interesting analogy from Reb Lezer Brody Shlita. He said, imagine if you take Ma'aseh Orim, Masha'orim and the Hashmonaim, they're fighting not only all the Arab countries around us, they're also fighting all the other Jews here in Eretz Yisrael. And that's more or less the way it was with the Hashmonaim fighting not only the Greek armies, but also fighting the Jews that were here in Eretz Yisrael, the Mityavnim, those Jews that sided with the Greeks. The first thing the Hashmonaim did when they won and they entered Beis HaMikdash was wanting to light the menorah. Why? The menorah is the thing more than anything else that symbolizes the combination of body and spirit. The most spiritual thing that we have in this world, that we can see, that we can fathom, that we relate to as something physical yet spiritual, is fire. You can see fire. You can feel fire. You put your hand and the fire will burn. You can't hold the fire. It doesn't have, to us, we can't feel it physically. Fire, according to the ancient philosophers, was called the spiritual of the physical. Haruchani shebagashmi. It's the most spiritual thing that we can see and comprehend. On the other hand, the wick and the oil represent the physical plane, something that has substance, something that we can see and comprehend. Lighting the menorah symbolizes the combination between the physical world and the spiritual world, which is the Jewish key factor of what Hashem wants us to do in this world. He wants us to take the physical plane, take the spiritual plane. We believe that we have a guf, body, and a soul, a neshama. Combine them together and elevate them both to a level of kedusha. Don't disregard your physical needs. Sanctify your physical needs. Make your physical needs into things that are holy themselves. That was why the first thing the Hashmonaim wanted to do was to light the menorah. Because that symbolizes more than anything what the war with the Greeks was about. And that's why till today, how do we celebrate Hanukkah? By lighting the Chanukiah, symbolizing again the combination between body and between spirit. So now that we understand better why we celebrate the Chag of Hanukkah and why do we light the Chanukiah, we'll now start speaking about the different halachas relating to Hanukkah and specifically to lighting the Chanukiah. If there are any questions, please feel free to answer. We'd like to welcome our viewers on the internet here at Breslev Israel, breslev.co.il. If you have any questions, ideas, comments you'd like to write us, please. Our email address is breslev@breslev.co.il. How many candles are we supposed to light? Halachically, we have to differentiate between what is the halachic requirement and what is considered to be the extra hidur that we do. Halachically, you're only supposed to light one candle every single night. The hidur is to light on the first night one candle, the second night two candles, the third night three, and so on till eight. Now, today, it doesn't really have much of a halachic ramification for most of us, since today candles are considered to be relatively cheap. There were times in history where candles were very expensive. Not only that, there were special taxes in many countries in Europe on the candles. The taxes went directly to the leaders of the city, to the head of the city, the king. Sometimes in certain countries, the taxes on the candles went to the priesthood. So not many Jews could afford candles. You hear stories about how Gdolei Yisrael used to spare their candle. They used to put it out. They used to go and collect all these leftovers from other candles. And again, melting them together, putting a wick in the middle so they can reuse them. We're not aware of these things today because, Baruch Hashem, we live in a time of abundance. So today we've got no problem lighting eight candles on the eighth day. Not everyone can do it. We hear stories about people who were in the camps during the terrible Holocaust, or people who were in Russia, in Siberia, and couldn't afford or couldn't find too many candles. The halachic requirement is to light one candle for half an hour. That's it. From Tzeit HaKochavim, from when nightfall comes, we'll speak about when that is, until half an hour later. If you can afford to, and if you can do even more, you should light on the second night two candles, the third night three, and so on. One has to realize, the main part of the mitzvah is lighting the one candle that you light every single night. Now, how do we light candles? Most of us do it the same way. If you're looking at me, and the Chanukiah is behind me, we always start from the new candle to our left, and we start lighting in the direction going right. The first candle that we light every single night, let's take the third night. We will light the left candle, and then we'll light two other candles to the right. The first candle is considered to be the chiyuv. The other two candles are the hidur. What does that mean that the other two candles are the Hidur and they are not the Chiyuv candles? Let's imagine that we live in a place, we know that the most mehudar thing to light with Hanukkah candles is olive oil, representing the miracle that happened in Beis HaMikdash, which was with olive oil. What happens if you can't afford olive oil for all the candles? What do you do? Say the Poskim, try and make sure that the new candle is made of olive oil, and therefore that's the Ner Chiyuv, that's the basic halachic requirement, and the other two candles on the third night, you can use the wax to light those candles from. Another thing, one of the halachic differences between Sfarim and Ashkenazim is that Sfarim, only the father in the house lights a Chanukiah. There's only one Chanukiah lit. Among Ashkenazim, we have three different customs. Some only light, all the men light, and including all the boys above Gil Chinuch. In other houses, all the girls also light, except for the mother. Since the mother is Yoitze by the Hadlokah of her husband. Her husband lights for her because we say Ishto Kigufo. His wife is like his body. Among the Yekish, among those Jews who come from Germany and from Austria, so too will the wife, the mother, light a Chanukiah and she will make a brocha. When we want to try and educate our children for mitzvahs, if you're an Ashkenazi, it's much easier. You give your child a separate Chanukiah. What do you do if you are a Sfaradi? We said if you're a Sfaradi, only the father lights a Chanukiah. There are two very common customs if you want to try and educate your children to the mitzvah and yet keeping your minhag. The first thing is to let your child light a separate Chanukiah, but he is not allowed to make a brocha, because among Sfarim, only the father makes a brocha. Second thing that the Poskim say is, you as the father, if you don't want to give them a separate Chanukiah, let's say that they're too young, or you're afraid that the Chanukiah will be spilt over for any other reasons, you light the Ner Chiyuv, you light the basic halachic requirement, which is the new candle, the left candle on the first night, or on the second, third night, and you let your children light the other candles, which are called Nerot HaHidur. Those are the candles that are not the basic halachic commandment. They're the extra hidul that we're trying to do for the mitzvah. So we have two customs. So now we can see the ramification between what is the basic halachic requirement and what is adding on to the mitzvah, trying to do an extra hidul to the mitzvah. What is the best Chanukiah that one should buy? We want to know, we know we have a rule, the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, and Daf Kuf Lamed Beis Amud Beis, on the 132nd page, Ze Eli Ve'anveu Hitna'e Lechanav BeMitzvot. We should try and make our mitzvahs, we should try and make them very respectable. As I said again before, since I was born in Israel, I'm not an English speaker, so you will excuse me for my mistakes in grammar and in diction. We want to make the mitzvahs as mechubedik as we can. We want to make them look nice. When we go and buy a talis, we try and buy a nice looking expensive talis, something that shows our respect towards Hashem and towards the mitzvahs. The same thing is with the Chanukiah. We are supposed to buy a nice Chanukiah. You can of course take a Chanukiah like the kids make in school, which is a piece of wood, and you take, what was it, they take, I think, beer tops, beer bottle tops, and they stick them and you put the candle on them. You can do that, but that is not very mechubedik, and that's not very respectable towards the mitzvah. What do you do? There's a machlokes between the poskim, should you prefer a golden Chanukiah or a silver Chanukiah? Now, just before we continue, anyone that can afford to make a Chanukiah from solid gold, please, don't do that. Come to me. I've got lots and lots of things that I can do with your money, many tzedakah purposes that I can have. I promise you in Shamayim, they'll be much happier if you light in a simple Chanukiah and you give the money to me so that I can use it for tzedakah. But let's say that you are a multi-billionaire. May all of you be multi-billionaires and have buildings upon buildings here in Yerushalayim and among the world. And except for the abundance of tzedakah that you give every year, you can afford to make a Chanukiah from gold. What is better, to have a Chanukiah made of gold or of silver? There is a machlokes between the poskim and between the mekubalim. The poskim say you should have a Chanukiah made of gold, and gold is much more expensive. Yesterday someone checked it for me. The value of gold is 50 times more per gram than a gram of silver. So if you can afford to have a Chanukiah made of solid gold, do that. According to the mekubalim, you should not have a Chanukiah of gold, because gold represents judgment. It represents dinim, while silver represents chesed and rachamim, mercy and charity. That's why we can also see that when a man marries a woman, we know that under the chuppah he gives her a ring. Again, we have the same machloikis, what should the ring be made of? According to the poskim, the ring should be made of gold. According to the Mekubalim, the ring should be made of silver. There was a solution given by the previous Tzanzer Rebbe, the Rebbe from Tzanz Kloisenburg, the Shefach Chaim, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who said you can make the ring out of white gold, and you gain both attributes. It's also the color of white, which represents chesed, charity and mercy, and it is also made of gold, which is a more expensive material. That is what he says. So, if anyone wants to do that combination with a Chanukiah and have it from white gold, again, please speak to me before you do that. I promise you, giving tzedakah is much more important than having a nice Chanukiah. There's a machlokes among the poskim, what should I prefer if I can choose between a Chanukiah, which is pretty or valuable? We'll explain. About 150 years ago, lived an extremely crazy person with severe mental problems known as Van Gogh. He was a crazy artist who towards the end of his life cut off his ear and then committed suicide. And he drew paintings that, again, with all due respect, I am not a great connoisseur of arts and I don't understand that much about art, but personally I think that a standard 12-year-old could probably do a better job. Again, that's my personal opinion. I do not understand what people find with his drawings. I find them to be relatively ugly, unproportional, and rather disdainful. But again, that's my opinion. His paintings are sold for tens of millions of dollars around the world. I personally wouldn't have such a thing even in the entrance to my house because I think it makes it look extremely ugly. Some people think it's beautiful. Why? Because it's worth a lot of money. People tend to look at beauty in different ways. Beauty can be something which is aesthetic. Beauty can also be something which is expensive. If we take a standard Chanukiah today, which is silver-coated, you can get a very beautiful Chanukiah for 200 shekel. On the other hand, I could probably go to some mentally deranged artist, who obviously, since he's mentally deranged, he's considered to be a very well-known and prominent artist, and ask him to make for me a Chanukiah, which would be the most ugliest thing that one of you have ever seen, but would probably cost about $20,000. And the question is, what Chanukiah should I prefer? The ugly and expensive one for $20,000, or the nice and cheap one for 200 shekel that looks very nice, it looks like a Chanukiah? It's not that simple, we have a machlokes between the poskim. Moran Rav Steinemann Shlita says that you should have the prettier Chanukiah. And what is his raya that you should do that? The Gemara says in Baba Basra on the fourth page that when Hordus built the second Beis HaMikdash, the outer walls were made of blue marble. And they were built in such a way that some of the stones were set more inwards, some of them more outwards. It looked as if we are talking here, but it looked like the waves on the sea. And Hordus then wanted to cover the outer walls with gold. Said to him, Chachmei Yisrael, don't cover them with gold. The blue marble is much prettier. Now obviously, having a gold coating on the walls is much more expensive. Yet we can see here Chachmei Yisrael preferred beauty over value. So says Rav Steinemann, from here we see that beauty is more important than value. It's better to have a nice silver-coated Chanukiah for 200 shekel than something ugly from a prominent mentally deranged artist for $20,000. On the other hand, Rav Yoshiv Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he disagrees. He says that value is more important than beauty. And what's his raya? The Gemara in Yerushalmi, on Maseches Yoima, on the sixth chapter, asks a shaila. We know that on Yom HaKippurim we had to sacrifice a korban of goats known as Seirim. One of them was sacrificed to Hashem, the other was taken into the desert and was thrown down a very steep hill. And eventually, when it reached the bottom, there was not much left of it. And that was known as the Korban Lazazel. And the Gemara there debates, if I have here a choice between a very fat and valuable goat, and he's worth a lot of money since he's got a lot of meat on him, or a much slimmer, trimmer goat, but he looks more respectable, he's prettier, what should I prefer? And the Gemara says, take the fat goat. Maybe because when he falls down, I mean, it's more interesting, I don't know. But says the Gemara, the fat goat is much more valuable and therefore it is more worthy to serve as a korban beis hamikdash. Says Rav Yoshiv, we can see from here that value is more important than beauty. So again, we have here a halachic debate. If anyone wants to buy a Chanukiah from a mentally deranged artist for $20,000 and he has this suffix, he has two choices to choose. Again, if you're willing to spend that amount in front of Chanukiah, please. There's so many more important things that you can do with your money. Chanukiyot, buying them from mentally deranged people, is not one of them. Who has to light the Chanukah candles? Chanukah candles have to be lit by everyone. Yes?
What about a glass or crystal?
Oh, glass or crystal. The Poskim in Kaf HaChaim, he brings the list of preferable metals, and glass there is one of the last. In other words, glass is not considered to be as mechubedik or as pretty as other ones from the Kabbalic reasonings. He brings there a list of different of 15 different metals which represent the 15 Shir Malas, and he says what is the most preferable metal. Glass, or not necessarily metal, he speaks also about materials. He speaks about wood, he speaks about copper, he speaks about stone. Glass is one of the last. That is from the Kabbalic reasons. Again, if we're talking about a pretty Chanukiah, something that is valuable, you could today buy a crystal Chanukiah which is worth much more than a silver Chanukiah. So again, if it's from Kabbalic reasons, do not use glass. If you are not a Kabbalic person, you are allowed to use glass as long as it's something that looks nice and mechubedik. Yes?
The silver Chanukiyot, they get dirty from the oil, and so you have these glass things that sit on the Chanukiah.
Is that a problem? Is that a problem? A very good shaila is asked. Something that was actually this debate was discussed a couple of years ago. Most people that use silver Chanukiyot do not light in the silver basins themselves. They put on top of them small glass cups or small glass goblets filled with oil, and they actually put and they light the wick in something which is glass. Is that considered to be taking the Chanukiah? If you happen to be very strict about the Kabbalic reasoning, you're actually lighting in glass. You're actually in a glass vessel. You're not lighting in a silver vessel. Some do hold that it is not preferable, and therefore we will see many Hasidic rabbis who actually light inside the silver goblets themselves. They have the Chanukiah specially made, which is completely sealed. The silver goblet is completely sealed, and they do not use glass goblets. According to most poskim, there's no problem whatsoever, since the main part of the Chanukiah is still silver. You're just holding it, and it is just more comfortable for you to use. Therefore, there's no problem. And indeed, we can see pictures of the great poskim. We see pictures of the Gaon Rav Avadia Yosef Shlita, of the Gaon Rav Mordechai Eliyahu Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rav Yoshiv Zecher Tzadik Livracha, all of them, of course, are the great Geonim. Just if we repeat it, we won't finish the Shia. So, Chas V'Chalil, it's no disrespect. We see pictures of all of Gedolei Yisrael, except for most of the Hasidic rabbis. We see them lighting in silver Chanukiyot, lighting directly in the glass goblets. Yes?
The question of with the Beit Mikdash wall being gold or marble against the fat goat, as connected to the Chanukiyot, I think it would be worth noting that the goat was for kapora. So you need a lot of something expensive to do the kapora, while the Beit Mikdash for the Hidur of Hashem.
Someone is trying to say that there's a difference between the raya that we brought from Beis HaMikdash, that having something pretty is preferable, and having something valuable, by saying the Beis HaMikdash served a different purpose than the Chanukiah. I agree, there is room to debate.
The paper dish and the Korban of the Goat.
And the Korban. I agree, there is room to debate about those rites, but these are the rites that the post can bring, and we're not coming to disagree with them here. Yes?
In the case of the Dura of the Menorah, is it beauty is in the eye of the beholder? Is it the person that likes what he considers beautiful, or what?
That's a very good shaila, which is also a general shaila. Is beauty in the eyes of the beholder when it comes to halachic reasoning? The answer is yes and no. What does it mean no? If the hidu is because Zeli van Veu, there's a very, very famous Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer on Maseches Sukkah, on the 36th page, says about the din of Zeli van Veu. He speaks about combining the lulav. We know that part of the hid of having the lulav is taking all the arba seminim and doing something that's called igud. Igud means combining them together. Now, today most people, when they like taking, they take what's called a kosh kalach, and they like combining it together. Most people, when they take the lulav branches, the way they do it is, they like to make this internal loop. You see the kids selling in the corners of Mass Shorim. It's like an internal loop, which you take it, you thread it through, it looks very nice and square and respectable. If we see from the Gemara, the way that you're supposed to do the igud is you're supposed to take a very thin strip of a lulav leaf and tie it with two knots. Now, it doesn't look as nice, but that's the halachic requirement. How do we learn that? Because the Gemara discusses what will a person do if he forgot to combine his lulav and it's now yontif. You're not allowed to tie two knots in yontif. What is he supposed to do? So the Gemara says you do it in a way that's not really tying a knot, and then on Motzei yontif you'll be tight. Says the Chatam Sofer rule, from here we learn that the Geder of Zeh Livan Veil, what is considered to be pretty and a Hidu Mitzvah, has got nothing to do with what you think is pretty. It's got to do with what Chachmei Yisroel considered to be pretty. That's when we speak about the Hidu of Zeh Livan Veil. But inside that, there's a lot of room for your own personal maneuvering. For example, I want to buy a very nice talus. I can choose what color stripes I want on my talus. I can choose whether I want to have black stripes or blue stripes. That, again, is in the eyes of the beholder. That is not something which Chachmei Yisrael discussed. By the way, we should know, the original color of stripes was not black. The original color of stripes was blue. And anyone who wants to see this can look on the Mishnah Brura. On the Shulchan Aruch, on Aruch Chaim, Siman Tet, Seif Hei, if I'm not mistaken, the Mishnah Brura, Seif Katan Tet Vav, on the 15th chapter, on the 15th Seif Katan there, he says that the reason we have blue stripes is Zecher Latcheles. Now, how did the stripes become black? I do not know. The only explanation that I can think of is because the Rambam on Hilchos Tzitzis on the third chapter says that Tcheles is a color that is very close to black. So maybe they held according to the Rambam, and that's why most Talesim today are black. Again, I don't know. The original color was blue, not black. And by the way, the Mishnah Berurah is not his own invention. It's a quote from the Prima Godim, who lived 200 years before him. So that is in the eyes of the beholder. Women are also obligated to light the Chanukah candles, even though the Mishnah on Maseches Kiddushin on the 29th page says that the women are exempt from mitzvot aseh she'azman girama, that from mitzvahs that are from positive commandments that are related to a time frame, and Chanukah is obviously related to a time frame. It's 8 days during the year. Nevertheless, women are still obligated, mishum she'af hena yuvoto anes. They too were part of the Nes Chanukah. Not only were they part of the Nes Chanukah, because the Greek war against Am Yisrael was not just against the men, also against the women. According to the Midrash, they had a very important role in the victory of the Chashmonaim. The Midrash tells us that the daughter of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, her name was Yehudit. And Yehudit went out one day into the Greek army, offering herself to the Greek leader, who, according to some sources, his name was Antiphanes. She let him have lots of cheese, obviously very salty cheese. He became very thirsty, and she gave him to drink wine. And since he obviously was a Greek goy, so he drank and drank and drank and got very drunk, and then fell asleep because he was exhausted. And then she took his sword and she cut off his head. Brought the head back to Machne Yisrael. They were very happy. They put him on a pole, stuck him outside the walls of Yerushalayim, and they said, please, anyone else who wants to have his head impaled on our wall, please step forward. We'll be happy to oblige with your requests. And that was a great turning point in the war, because when the Greeks saw this is what happened to their leader, then we know that what happens to the rest of the war. And the honest truth is, when we follow Greek history, we see that Greeks were very dependent on their leaders. Anyone who reads the ancient Greeks' writings, and anyone who reads the story of the Odyssey, sees that one of the greatest defeats that the Greeks had was when their heroes such as Ajax and Achilles were killed. So therefore we can understand also logically why killing the Greek leader caused a great shift in power, and that was one of the great turning points of the war. So women are obligated by the mitzvah of Chanukah. Now what does that mean? There's halachic ramification. A person who knows he's not going to be home, he's not going to be home at all for the first night or for the second night, why isn't he going to be home? A person who's going to Rabbeinu for Uman on Chanukah. This year it's not that relevant, because this year most people are going on the second Shabbos and they're only going to be coming back after Hanukkah has ended. But one of the most interesting things about the Ukrainian airport in Kiev and in Odyssey is time frame. It doesn't exist. They've got no problem leaving you in the airport there for 12, 24, 36 hours and just you don't know what happened, but you're just there. The plane is being delayed. Now, no one knows why. Maybe because the Russian airplane has got lots of problems. Doesn't have its wings attached or its wheels put on. We don't know, but that happens. So imagine if Hanukkah, Shabbos Hanukkah comes out in the middle of Hanukkah and you're planning to come back to be home for the fifth night, but you're in the Ukrainian airport and, sorry, the plane is only going to arrive in 24 hours. Why? We don't know, but that's what's going to happen. So you call your wife and you tell her, listen, my darling wife, I'm really sorry, I'm not going to be home. What do you do? Very simple. You ask your wife to be your shaliach. You say to her, please light for me. I'm not going to be home. It's all during the night. Please light for me. And you intend, you should have the kavanah and the intent that you are lighting also for me. And that way you're yotze the mitzvah because your wife is lighting for you. Now, in many other mitzvahs, you can't ask your wife to substitute you because her obligation is completely different than yours, not on Hanukkah. You have the exact same halachic obligation to light the candles, so therefore she can light instead of you. What happens if a person knows that he is coming home late? For example, he got stuck in traffic, or he is working and he's only supposed to be home at 8 o'clock or at 9 o'clock. Today, the Lekatzchila, when should we light the Hanukkah candles? Hanukkah candles, according to most poskim, both Ashkenazi and Sephardi, should be lit at Tzeta Kochavim. Tzeta Kochavim, there are three opinions. Some say that it's 13 and a half minutes after the Shkia, 18 minutes after the Shkia, or 20 minutes after the Shkia. What does that mean in time? What does that mean time-wise today? The Shkia today, sunset in Yerushalayim during the week of Hanukkah, is going to be between 4:40 p.m. and 4:41. So if we say it's 13 and a half minutes, that means that Tzeta Kochavim is 4:53 and a half p.m. If we say it's 18 minutes, it's 4:58. If we say that it's 20 minutes, it's 5 o'clock p.m. Now, we'll take 20 minutes as a time frame because it's just easier to calculate. It turns out to be a round number. Halachically, the best time to light, and that's what every single one of us should try and light the Hanukkah candles, is within the first half an hour after Tzeta Kochavim. In other words, we should make every effort that we can to be home between 5 and 5:30 and light the candles up to 5:30. That is the Lekatchila. What happens if we're working, we're stuck in a traffic jam, and everyone knows what happens in traffic jams here in Israel. 99% of traffic jams is because all the other drivers decided they have to stop and drive slowly and see who is the guy sitting in the ambulance. Could it be my next door neighbor, friend, my wife's relation, and so on. And therefore you suddenly realize after you passed the area of accident that you don't know why you've been delayed, because the whole road is clear and you just see people stopping and peeking out. I don't know if it's something that's something unique to Israel, or that is something that's common everywhere else, all over the world. Very common. I'll tell you one of the differences between Israel and America, for example. I have a good friend who lived in St. Louis, and he told me that 80 years after St. Louis was planned, they had a serious problem there of traffic jams. Why? Because St. Louis became a bit too crowded with cars, and the six-lane roads that they planned just got too small. In St. Louis, they thought 80 years in advance. In Israel, they think 2 days in advance, and when they build it, it's already 2 years behind schedule. So you get the main road leading to Yerushalayim has only got two passages, which is terrible, especially if you have a car accident. Everyone who's gone up to Yerushalayim knows exactly what I mean. You get stuck in a traffic jam. You're only going to be home at 7 p.m. That's an hour and a half after the time that you should try and light Hanukkah candles. What should you do? Two different halachic opinions. According to the Gaon of Yaakov Yosef Shlita, you should call up and tell your wife, you should say to her, my darling wife, I'm really sorry, I'm going to be late. Please light for me. Why? Because according to Rav Yaakov Yosef Shlita, it's more important for the Hanukkah candles to be lit at the appropriate halachic time than to light them together. But Shevet HaLevi, the Gaon of Shmuel Vozna Shlita, he holds differently. He says that you should wait and light the candles together with your wife. He also brings that the Rav HaFetz Chaim, Reb Nachum of Hodona, used to wait till his wife got back. Why? The Gemara on Shabbos on the 23rd page, asks a shayla, what is preferable if you don't have enough money to buy a Shabbos candle or a Hanukkah candle? What should you prefer? Says the Gemara, you should prefer Shabbos candle. Why? Shabbos candles, their purpose is shalom bais. You should have some light in your house so you don't trip over and you don't blame your wife and say to her, why didn't you do what you're supposed to do and light the candles? So it's better to buy a Shabbos candle. We see that shalom bais is more important than a Hanukkah candle. How do you think that your wife would feel if she is coming home late and you already lit the Hanukkah candles and she wasn't part of Hanukkah? I had a very terrible story last year, which an avreches, a woman here, someone from the kehillah, she called me up. She was very upset. She said, I come home every day at 9 o'clock because I work to help my husband sit and learn. He's already lit the Chanukiah and the candles have gone now because it's already been 4 hours. I mean, candles are not that big. And there's a donut waiting for me in the microwave. She said to me, that's my Hanukkah? That's my Hanukkah? What, for this I'm working so hard? What about me? Where is my Hanukkah? Where's my spirituality? Where's my lighting the candles together with my family and having a family feeling? Having a spiritual uplift on Hanukkah. Therefore, says Shevet HaLevi, you do not light the candles on your own. You wait for your wife, irrelevant what time she comes home. You wait for your husband, and Hanukkah is a family chag. You light the candles together. Because Shalom Bayis, as we saw from the Gemara and Shabbos, is more important than lighting the Hanukkah candles. I also asked the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Shalom Arishlita, and he agreed with Shevet HaLevi. He also said that in his opinion, you do not light the Hanukkah candles on your own. It is more important to light them together with your wife than it is to be very medactic on the halachic requirements and lighting them on the first half an hour. Nothing will happen. This is more important. Now, here's another thing that we should speak about, even though it is not necessarily a halachic issue, but it is more of a chinuch issue. The Chagim are wonderful times for us as parents, as fathers, to instill into our family the wonderful values of Yiddishkeit. Chagim are times of happiness, of spiritual uplift. Everyone is together, and it gives us the chance of teaching our children and our families what we want to instill in them. Many children say that the happiest events that they remember are the joint festivals that they had together with their family, sitting at the Seder table, lighting the Hanukkah candles. But that means two things. A, we have to make sure that the Hanukkah lighting is a happy event. If you're uptight about lighting on the exact time, and that the oil doesn't spill, and everything is tension and anger and kapeda, and that's what your children realize, your children will hate Hanukkah lighting. They'll remember that Hanukkah lighting was devastating, it was terrible. Daddy was angry, daddy was uptight, no one was happy, daddy punished, daddy screamed, what a terrible feeling, and that will not make them want to light Hanukkah candles. There's a very famous story, which is told by many Balei Musa, which the story is brought in the name of the Gaon Reb Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who was the halachic leader in America 30, 40 years ago. We know that in America, when Jews started coming there during the time of Second World War, it was very difficult to be a Shomer Shabbos Jew and have a good job. Because in America in those times, till today, you worked on Shabbat. Sunday is the holiday. Many Jews that came as frum Jews and entered into new and had new jobs and entered into new positions, suddenly they come Shabbat and they're expected to work. Now they, of course, were God-fearing Jews, and they preserved the Shabbat, and they quit their jobs, and they were fired. Reb Moshe Feinstein was once asked, he said, how come that we see certain families that went through this Nisoyon, all their children, Kanayin Hora, are God-fearing Jews, are happy Jews? We can see that all their descendants, Baruch Hashem, are all going in the straight path. On the other hand, we see people who went through the same Nisoyon, and they too did not work on the Shabbat, they too were fired, yet their children have gone off the derech, they've gone off the way, they don't want to be from Jews. Said Reb Moshe Feinstein, it all depends on the reaction of the father and how the father treated the whole incident every single Shabbat. If the father sat at the Shabbos table and said to his family, Baruch Hashem that we're Jews, we should be so happy we've got such a wonderful gift called the Shabbat, and that we're given every single week a new chance to prove how much we love Hashem, and we love the Shabbat, and we believe that Hashem will provide for us, and so on. His children learned that being Jewish and being frum is something happy, something exalting, something that makes you feel spiritually uplifted. And they too wanted to follow in the path of their father. But if, on the other hand, the father sat down on the Shabbos table and said, "Oy," you know, the krechtzen that a Jew does, "Oy, being Jewish and from is so hard. Oh, every single week. Oh, but that's what Hashem wants from us. That's what we've got to do." So what does the child learn? The child learns that being Jewish and from is difficult and it's hard. So why will he want to be from when he grows older? Said Reb Moshe Feinstein, it all depends on the attitude. It's the same thing with mitzvahs. Everything depends on the attitude. If we instill a happy attitude and a happy atmosphere, and we let the kids be part of it, and they will spill the oil, and it will become dirty, and things will break, but we'll be happy about it, and we'll smile, and we'll let them feel part of it, they will love the Jewish Chagim. They will love being from, they will follow in our path. If we don't do that, we will lose our children. They will not want to follow our footsteps. Now, the second thing is, if we want to instill a happy atmosphere, we, and Rabbi Yisai, we as husbands and fathers, we've got to work. We have to be prepared. You can't just come to the Hanukkah lighting with no preparation. You have to sit at least half an hour with a few books, looking at a nice story that you can tell your kids, something that represents a moral idea that you want to pass on to your children. If you want to pass on about Hanukkah, about the importance of learning Torah, find a nice story about learning Torah. We've got to think of how to make the Hanukkah lighting an interesting and happy event. Thinking of a fun game to play with the kids, having something nice to tell them, spending some time and effort and buying the kids little presents to make them excited and wait for the Hanukkah candle lighting. We have to invest time, money and effort in making this go the proper way. If we come with no preparation, then your Hanukkah lighting will look just the same way. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Okay, very good. Now what? Okay, let's sing Mosur. Dear wife, did you buy a donut? Okay, no donut today. Okay, everyone can go off and do whatever they did. Thank you. That's a wonderful Hanukkah feeling. We have to be prepared. There are wonderful books today. We have Baruch Hashem. We're all here. We're living next to wonderful bookstores. You have here in Mash Sha'orim, you have Mani's Orachaim store, you have the Feldheim Supercenter, lots of books in English about Hanukkah, stories, wonderful stories you can tell the children, wonderful games that you can play with the children. The children will wait for this and they will cherish these moments for the rest of their lives. Now we'll continue with the halachas. Yeshiva bochas who learn in yeshiva, not married. Very common here in Eretz Yisrael, we have lots of yeshiva bochas who came from abroad, especially from America, England, South Africa, come to learn here in Eretz Yisrael, and they're not married. If they are of Sephardi origin, they do not light the Hanukkah candles. Their parents light for them abroad, and they are exempt from the mitzvah. But what happens if their parents live in a different time zone, and their parents will only light for them after it's Hanukkah here? Here we have a machloikis between the poskim, and according to Shevet HaLevi, the best thing to do is that the yeshiva bocha, or this is also very common with soldiers who are in the army and their parents are home, they don't have a way to light, they should light, in that case their parents light for them. But if their parents live abroad, they're mitnadvei chutz la'aretz who came here to be in the army, if their parents are in a different time zone, the best thing to do is to light a Chanukiah without a bracha, if again they are of Sephardi origin, and let their parent light at home, even if it's a few hours later, with a bracha. If they're of Ashkenazi origin, it's not a problem, because just like Ashkenazim light in their own homes, every single male and most females light the Chanukiah making a bracha, so too when they're learning in yeshiva or when they're in the army. Baruch Hashem, in our generation today, we have an ichud and a kibbutz galuyot. We all live together, we all work together, the soldiers serve in the army together, Ashkenazim and Sfadim, so it's not a problem. There's always going to be an Ashkenazi person who's going to light the Chanukiah. So there's always be a Chanukiah in your close area, there's always be someone in your room who's going to be lighting the Chanukiah. What do we do about people who are planning to go to Uman? Now that is a very important question, since people are going to Uman Bezrat Hashem to Rabbeinu. As we know, going to Rabbeinu Nachman of Breslev, there were three times during the year which the Hasidim used to go and hear Rabbi Nachman. On Shabbos Hanukkah, on Shavuos, and on Rosh Hashanah. Now, Rosh Hashanah is the most important. Shabbos, Chanukah, and Shavuos are... You're not obligated to go. It's a very good thing. It's very interesting. If you're going for Chanukah, just a warning, get some very warm clothes. That is the Russian winter. What does a person do if he goes to Chanukah? Again, if he is Sephardi, his wife is going to be here in Eretz Yisrael, she can light for him. If he's an Ashkenazi, he can light there, and his wife will light her, will light here in Eretz Yisrael on her own. What happens when we go and we stay with our family on Chanukah? Interesting, in certain countries, people who were non-learned people thought that Shavuos was the holiday and the festival of visiting. Visiting relations, visiting friends. Why? One of the names of Shavuos is Chag HaBikurim. Bikurim, if you spell it with a kuf instead of a kaf, means the festival of visiting. So they thought that Shavuos, you were supposed to visit everyone else. Chanukah has become, in many ways, Shabbos Chanukah has become the Shabbatot of visiting your parents, and all other relations. So much so that if you don't go to your parents on Shabbos Chanukah, then this is a big sakona of Kibbutz Avayim, because they say, what's going on here? You're not coming to me for Shabbos Chanukah. Many people go and stay in different places for Shabbos Chanukah. If you're staying by your parents, what do you do about Chanukah lighting? Let's speak about this Shabbos. Motzei Shabbos is the first Chanukah candle lighting. Most people who go to stay for Shabbos at other people come back on Motzei Shabbos. But we just said before that you should be try and light the candles in the first half an hour. You can light the candles until Acha Kaltaragil Minashuk, which means until people stop walking in the streets. The poskim say that the common hour is around 10:30, 11. Again, that depends on the neighborhoods. In some neighborhoods, at 3 o'clock, people are still walking outside, and there's not much difference between 3 o'clock or 9 o'clock. Same thing. But you should try and light the Chanukah candles the first half an hour. If you're going back home, where should you light them? We have here three different opinions. Rav Avadia Yosef Shlita says that you should light the Chanukah candles in your home, which means pack up, leave quickly, get home, light the Chanukah candles. Rav Shlomo Zalman Oibach says something very interesting. He says, no, he said, light the candles where you're staying. If you're now at your parents on Motzei Shabbos, where did you sleep over the Shabbos? At your parents. That is considered to be your house. Light the candles there. Shevet HaLevi Rav Rozner says you have to differentiate by the time that you're coming back. If you come back home before 10:30, light in your house. If you come back after 10:30, light in your parents and your parents-in-law's houses. The best thing to do, and again, this is not always an option, is stay there for another night. Now, sometimes it's really not an option because the parents, all they can think about is, please go, please go. We've had enough. We need some time off. If you can stay for another night, that's the best thing. What happens to someone who's going to a hotel? Going to hotels is very problematic on Chanukah and generally. First of all, going to hotels generally, one should be very cautious about Shemir Sinai. Most hotels are not the best places to go for a frum person. They're not the most sneeristic places, and you should just know also, even the Mahadrin places, you can't imagine the kashrus problems that you have in hotels. Running a very big kitchen is very complicated. Chanukah is much more problematic. Why? Today in Israel, in most hotels, legally, you are not allowed to light candles in your room. They have their fire detectors, and if you light candles, oh, the security will be running up to your room. You're not allowed to. You can't light the Chanukah candles in your room. Now, we know that according in Chanukah, where you are supposed to light where you are staying. Chanukah goes according to the place you're sleeping, not at the place you're eating. For example, if I'm in Yerushalayim and I go to eat by my parents who also live in Yerushalayim, I am still supposed to light where I sleep, not where I eat. In my house, not in their house. In a hotel, practically, you can't light in your hotel room. So you're going to have to go downstairs to the lobby and light where you're eating, which is very problematic because that downstairs, the lobby, is not considered to be your room. It's considered to be public property. So lighting on a hotel is very problematic halachically on Chanukah since you're not allowed to light. Preferably, do not go to a hotel on Chanukah. If you want to go to a hotel, try and go to a hotel on a different time. Chanukah is just very problematic. Whatever happens, you go on Chanukah, the mitzvah of lighting Chanukah candles becomes bedieved gadol. It's not lekatchila at all. You're not doing the mitzvah lekatchila. So if you can push off your vacation by a few more days, that would be the most preferable halachically. Chanukah has something very unique about it, which no other chag has. and that is making a bracha by simply seeing the candles. The Gemara on Maseches Sukkah, on the 46th page, says that a person who doesn't have Hanukkah candles, but he sees a Hanukkiah being lit, he himself is allowed to bench. On the first night, he'll make two brachas. We know we have three brachas for someone who lights. Lehadlik ner shel Chanukah, or lehadlik ner Chanukah, she'asa nisim la'avoteinu, and she'chiyanu v'kimanu v'gyanu l'zman hazeh. If you can only see the Hanukkah candles, you not light them. On the first night, you can make two brachas, she'asa nisim and she'chiyanu. On the other nights, you make one bracha, and that is she'asa nisim. That is the only mitzvah in the Torah, the only mitzvah that you will make a blessing just by seeing the mitzvah. You don't make a blessing by seeing the lulav, or by seeing the sukkah, or by seeing the matzahs. You have to eat the matzahs, and you have to take the lulav, and you have to sit in the sukkah. Chanukah is the only mitzvah where nearly by seeing the Chanukah candles you make a bracha. Why? Say the Baalei HaTosfos, mipnei chavivut hanes. The miracle of Chanukah is something that Am Yisrael is so fond of, something so unique, something so spiritually uplifting. It is so special, the festival of Chanukah, that is the only time that we will make a blessing merely by seeing the Chanukah candles. So if you have a quiz, this is a good question to ask your kids. What is the only mitzvah that you make a bracha just by seeing it? Answer, Chanukah candles. Yes? See, no. We have to differentiate between mitzvahs, that the mitzvah is seeing something, like for example seeing a king or seeing the fire, and then you only bless on seeing them. The mitzvah, Hanukkah candles, the mitzvah is not seeing them, the mitzvah is lighting them. Lulav, the mitzvah is not seeing a lulav, it's lighting them. Hanukkah is the only thing where the mitzvah is lighting, but nevertheless you can bench merely by seeing it. What about young children? When should we let young children start lighting from? Again, we said that there's a difference between Ashkenazim and Sfarim. Children should be taught to light the Chanukah candles when they reach the Gil of Chinuch. What is the Gil of Chinuch? When a child reaches the age of 9, to all dayas, he is at the age of Chinuch, you should start teaching him how to do the mitzvahs. When a child is younger, between the ages of 5 and 6, it depends on the child's personal maturity. Today you have a child who's 4 years old, and he speaks to you as if he's your best friend and is 30. He's rather mature, he understands exactly what's going on. It's like the joke about the father who comes to his son and he says, "My dear son, I want to explain to you how the world works." And the son goes to his father, "Yes, daddy, what do you want me to tell you?" So today that's our children. So many children are very mature at a young age. Some children don't reach the maturity at that age. Don't worry, when they're 20 years old, they'll be men. Okay, that will happen. You've got to take it according to your child's age. Today, most children at the age of 6 and 7 are mature enough, and you can teach them how to do the mitzvahs. If you're an Ashkenazi, it's very simple. You give them a Chanukiah on their own, and they light with a bracha. If you are a Sfari, then you can either let them have a Chanukiah where they light without a bracha, or you can let them light the Nerot HaHidur, not the first candle, which is the left candle that you light every single night, the other candles, which are only considered to be the Hidur mitzvah. A comment to those who give their children a Chanukiah to light. This is again my personal opinion, and this is an opinion which also depends on a financial situation. Personally, I think that one should not allow the children to light with wax candles, only with oil. Why? If we want to instill in our children how to do the mitzvah properly, then we've got to teach them from a very young age that the mitzvah is done with oil. That's the most mehudar. If they get used to lighting candles, candles are much prettier. Why would they want to change to oil? Oil is messy, it doesn't look that nice. The candles have got different colors and different things. Therefore, try and have your children light with oil. Two things about lighting with oil and with candles. One, there is a very interesting din brought in the Kaf HaChaim. Kaf HaChaim on Hilchas Chanukah says that when you fill your oils, I'm not talking about those of us who don't have the koach to prepare the oil and they buy the ready-made little goblets of oil. I'm talking about those of us who actually prepare the oil themselves. Says Kaf HaChaim, try and make sure that you don't fill everything with oil, that you have water at the bottom and oil on the top. Why? Says Kaf HaChaim, the water represents the goyim, hamayim hazedonim. Oil represents Am Yisrael. The oil will always be on top of the water. That is part of the miracle of Hanukkah. We, the Jews, conquered the Greeks. The oil was on top of the water. And to symbolize that mitzvah, that's how he says you should light the Hanukkah candles. Put a bit of oil inside the small glass container, and then on top of that put a bit of water, on top of that put oil. Last halacha about the cheap, thin wax candles. Do not use those cheap, thin wax candles that you find on the street. Two halachic reasons. Reason number one, they do not last for half an hour. Why? The way they measure the wax candles is very similar to the way they measure the kilometrage you have in a car. You see, they take a car which is brand new, which has got no problems, they take it to somewhere which is very cold, I don't know, maybe Antarctica, I'm not so sure, on a very straight road with no traffic, and they let it drive with no disturbances, and they say, this car does 20 kilometers for 1 gallon of lead, for 1 gallon of oil. You go, oh, for 1 liter, that's wonderful. And then you suddenly buy the car and you realize, not only doesn't it do 20 kilometers per liter, it probably does 20 liters per kilometer, and you don't realize what's going on here. It's the same thing with these candles. You see, when they measure these candles, they cut the wick to half a centimeter, and that's the way they measure it. But when you get the candles, have you seen the length of the wick? Normally they don't have a koch to cut the wicks. You get a wick which is half the size of the candle. But just by the time you light it, the candle's already finished. These candles don't last half an hour. So if you light it, you're not yet to the mitzvah. Second reason, these candles are dangerous. They're very thin. They tend to bend and topple over. Most cases and incidences of fire starting in Hanukkah are because of these cheap wax candles. So if you want to buy wax candles for your children, invest in quality wax candles, not those cheap things that you get for 3-4 shekel for a box. Thank you very much for being with us. Unfortunately, our time is up. It's already 12:30, and the Gaon Rav Nasan Maimon is here to give his shiur. As we said again, next week on Thursday, there will not be a shiur. It is a day off here in Yeshiva. We will be meeting Be'ezrat Hashem in 2 weeks' time. Thank you, and Chanukah Sameach.